I appreciate the invitation, and send Speaker Hughes regards. He's back in D.C., actually, in meetings at the White House today and yesterday, and the White House will probably never be the same after he's there, as you know. But you talked at the beginning about squawkers, and I've heard Speaker Hughes squawk occasionally, so we'll see if I can kind of replicate that. I do want to just take a minute and say a couple things about Senator Stephenson Howard. It's been interesting for me. Every year I've been in the legislature, Howard's been a member of the Senate. And I remember early phone calls with Howard and learning from him and watching him. I even got called after my very first session. I inadvertently scored, I think, 100% on the Taxpayer Association scorecard. I wish I could say that was a deliberate decision, but one of my constituents didn't like that and called me and shared with me that was not okay. I'm going to miss seeing Howard in the halls of the Capitol, and we'll see if I miss having Dan McKay in the House. Probably the thing I won't miss is the time that I was down in the Capitol has a gymnasium, and I was down there exercising, kind of feebly actually, and all of a sudden I turned around and Senator Stephenson was in a towel and said, "Brad, can I borrow some soap?" I won't ever miss that again, but other than that, I'm going to miss you, I think, in every way up at the Capitol. So thanks, Howard. I do appreciate the opportunity to be here. So I was actually going to spend a little bit of time talking about the intricacies of House Bill 293, but I think instead of doing that, I'll maybe share just a broader perspective. It looks like you've got more of that on the agenda later this morning. And so I believe that for myself and probably almost every member of the legislature, in fact, every public policymaker in the state, that Utah has been very successful because of three things: a combination of an educated and industrious and family-oriented people. We have this unique and amazing geographic location being the crossroads of the West here and all that it affords us. And we also have this very sound fiscal policy that has been a cornerstone of the state of Utah that's really given us the opportunity as a state to be the leader in every way and leave most every other state sort of in our dust, whether it's from an economic prosperity standpoint or a quality of life standpoint. We're very fortunate because of all of these ingredients, and I think they kind of all go together. So I don't know how many of you listen to podcasts, but I was actually working in my yard over the weekend and listening to a podcast, and there was one where they talked about this NASCAR racer. Many of you know of him. I don't know if Don Ipson's here or not. There's a guy named Richard Petty. How many of you have heard of Richard Petty before? At least kind of know who he is. One of the most extraordinary careers in NASCAR history. For 35 years, he was a driving legend in NASCAR. And during the first 20 years of his career, he was really unparalleled in terms of his ability to win races. He won 7 Daytona 500s in his first 20 years as a racer and as a car racer. And so something changed, though. And in the late 1970s, Richard Petty found himself constantly watching other people win races. And in fact, the last 8 years of his 35-year career, he didn't win a single race. And the reason for that, and he actually attributes it to this, is that other racing teams in the 1970s had decided that the world around them had changed. They had gone high-tech, in terms of 1970s high-tech, a little different than today, right? They had used much more sophisticated engineering. They managed their cars differently. And Richard Petty's team, quite frankly, he would admit, became complacent. And this is what he said. He said, "We'd been winning steadily for 20 years and decided we wouldn't change." And so one of the greatest racers in driving history ended his career without a win the last 8 years. And the lesson that I think he learned and that we can all learn from is that at times, as the world is changing around you and resistance to change is not necessarily always a good thing. And what worked for you once isn't going to work for you again. So let me take you back to the 2018 legislative session and some of the elements that were existing for us as we were dealing with public policy, and in particular, tax policy. We had record revenues, more revenue, quite frankly, than we knew what to do with. The state's growing at unprecedented rates, as is every other state in the country right now, but we're growing even faster, which generated a significant revenue for the state. We had our budget committees, however, at the same time doing phenomenal jobs going in and finding ways to scrub budgets and actually cut budgets. And we also had a number of other things happening. We had a ballot initiative out there that may or may not have gone on the ballot, may or may not have passed, but was a $700 million tax increase on Utahns, which was looming large for some people. But probably more importantly than anything, being the fastest growing state in the country creates significant challenges for us. And I think it's hard to impress upon people, unless you're in the legislature, how intense managing the growth of the state can feel at times. And then on top of all of that, probably the most important element that had an impact in terms of tax policy this last session was this notion, and I should have brought it, of our three-legged stool of tax policy. And the first leg is income tax, which is growing at unprecedented rates, is very healthy, and is the cornerstone, obviously, of education funding, but really has become the 64-pound gorilla in terms of state revenues. The second leg of the stool is property tax, which hasn't been keeping pace with the growth of the state. And the third is sales tax, which quite frankly has been kind of unpredictable and very difficult to understand where it's heading because of change of consumption patterns, the way people buy things is changing. And we've got this situation where our three-legged stool has continued to get more and more out of balance. And what 20 years ago was working very well for us in terms of fiscal stability was getting more and more difficult to manage for the legislature in terms of that future and prospective stability. So, with all those factors kind of bearing down on the legislature, we in fact passed House Bill 293, which was, I would be reticent to call it tax reform. I would call it tax tweaking, tax adjusting. It's not probably in its entirety tax reform, but it did a number of different things. And the first thing that House Bill 293 did is it made Utah more competitive for workers and for businesses by lowering the income tax rate to 4.95%. And while not a significant change, it is an income tax reduction and one that will make us more competitive in a lot of different ways. The second thing that we did to make our economy and our state more competitive for business is something we've wanted to do for a long time, which is implement and pass mandatory single sales factor apportionment, which at its essence will reward companies that build and locate and invest in Utah over those that just sell into Utah. And, of course, the last two things of this tax bill were a little more controversial because the first two things, tax cuts, those are easy, fun things to vote for as a policymaker. We all like those. The other issues are a little more difficult to understand and also more difficult to support. But at the end of the day, the third ingredient was freezing the basic levy for property tax and equalizing that money for 5 years across school districts across the state. And the fourth is using that same basic levy to ensure that the local effort in terms of property tax towards education stays constant to where it was at the beginning of this year. And so those two latter components of the tax bill over a number of years will actually increase revenues primarily to public education. And so why in the world would the legislature combine those four things together? And it's probably a complex question that we don't have a ton of time for today, but maybe give you some perspective. And you'll probably think less of me if I tell you this story. Maybe you'll think more of me, but we're kind of goofy with our kids. I think you realize when you're raising teenagers, you've got to kind of use every weapon you can in terms of the constant struggle you have with them. And we have a couple family models. And one of those models is kind of a pretty simple thing, and it's WDDT. And we have that on the back door to our garage, and it stands for Wilsons Do Difficult Things. And I think to some extent, you could say the LDDT, the legislature did difficult things this last session. And they did it because we believed that this interdependent three-legged stool was failing and was going to fail even more down the road. And this kind of secret sauce to our fiscal stability was in jeopardy. And so here's kind of some context for that. The publication U.S. News & World Report last year ranked Utah the third best state in the country, just best. And they had about 20 different ingredients for this. But let me address the ones that relate to House Bill 293. They said we were the best state in terms of fiscal stability. This three-legged stool was actually better in Utah than a lot of other states. But yet, we have data to prove that it's trending the wrong direction, and our fiscal stability was in jeopardy. U.S. News & World Report said we had the second best economy in the country. And I think that that's true, and I'm not sure that's in jeopardy at all right now. But if you talk to employers right now, the big issue that they face is their workforce and an educated workforce, something that we have concerns about. And we have data to prove that we're trending in the wrong direction in terms of our ability to deliver that workforce to employers. And by the way, U.S. News & World Report said we're the third best in the country in terms of educational outcomes. But again, trending in the wrong direction. And we're number eight in this country in terms of infrastructure. And we've done some things to address that, but there is no way that we can keep up with the infrastructure demands of this state as it's growing at the rapid pace it is without kind of thinking structurally about what we do. So the question that Billy asked was, I'm going to fundamentally ask your question a little differently. Did the Our Schools Now group have an impact in terms of what happened with House Bill 293? And the answer is, yeah. But maybe not as much as people think. And I'll quickly, because I know my time is pretty much up, tell you what I think did have an impact. The first thing that had the biggest impact by far on House Bill 293 passing was federal tax reform. And the fact of the matter is, today in Utah, the average family is going to have $1,400 to $1,500 more in their pockets than they did before federal tax reform happened at the end of last year. Growth in the state budget had a big impact on passing 293. Our appropriations committee's cutting budgets had a big impact on passing 293. And our schools now did as well. I think that I would be remiss if I didn't say that sitting across the table from business leaders from across the state, millionaires and in some cases billionaires who had significant commitment and concern about the future of education in our state and were willing to put their money where their mouth was something that caught our attention. But more importantly than that, the prospect of a $700 million tax increase on the citizens of this state would have made it virtually impossible for the legislature to do any kind of significant prospective tax strategy, reform, rebalancing for probably the next decade. And it would have left Utah in a very, I think, uncompetitive situation. But there were some other things, and maybe one other ingredient that I will mention. The first two tax cuts were easy. The third and fourth were a little more difficult. But let me take you back to the general session of 2017. This may or may not come as a surprise, but occasionally, the last day of the session's shenanigans happen between the House and the Senate. And it actually happens less than you think. But the Senate, the last day of the 2017 session, sent over their last list of bills that they wanted us to hear. And on that list, and I might get the number wrong, Senator Fillmore here? I know Representative Last is here. Sorry, you don't want to hear this. But they sent over a property tax basic level freeze and equalization bill. And the Speaker has never voted for a property tax increase. I had never voted for a property tax increase. Representative Gibson, Representative Notwell had never voted for a property tax increase. Four members of elected House leadership. And it's possible that that bill in the 2017 session didn't get read onto our board in the order it came over. It might have got read on last. And it's 5 minutes to midnight. This bill comes up. And we're all like, oh, criminy. And little did we know, actually, we thought, well, we'll maybe give it a fair shake. But little did we know that Representative Last, who's the House sponsor of this bill, which freezes the basic levy for 5 years, basically is a property tax increase, he stands up, and we did not know he had a substitute. So at the end of the day, that bill dies. But that bill had the votes in the 2017 session to pass by itself. And so our ability to combine a property tax theoretical increase, if property values continue to go up, with tax cuts seemed like a good deal to many members of the House and House leadership. And so that's part of the reason that it passed, in addition to all of the other elements that I've described. Well, my time is up, but I will just say this. When we have the ability to do things that ensure that we don't become the Richard Pettys of the world and make sure that the things that we've done in the past are able to be carried forward and continue to work for us maybe in a different way and adapt to the changing world around us, I think the legislature is going to always evaluate and do those things if they can. Now, this was a hard vote for many lawmakers, and everyone that voted for or against that bill did what they thought was best for the state of Utah. But we are in a different economy right now, and I hope that in the future we'll see the legislature do difficult things down the road. But I will say this. I think our income tax die is cut for the near term, if not the long term. I think our property tax system is now adjusted or fixed for at least 5 years. Sales tax is a question. There's a lot of ambiguity about that right now. But and of course, we've got theoretically a gas tax increase, depending on what the voters of this state choose to recommend to the legislature. But it's probably not something you will, tax increases of any kind are probably not something that you will see being discussed in any kind of serious way in the legislature in the next few years. Will Rogers said that one of the things that I think is kind of funny and something that is probably appropriate for us. He said, be thankful we're not getting all the government we're paying for. We do need to get more out of the government that we have. And I don't think at this point we have a revenue issue with the state of Utah. Now that we've stabilized kind of our revenue sources, we need to focus more on the spending side. So thank you, Billy.